The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and today we're going to be talking about child rearing and getting back to basics. Parenting seems to be in crisis today. The court case in Mississippi recently was in the news about an assistant school principal who was paddling a child who was actually seriously injured when he fainted after the paddling. And this kind of incident in the news is bringing into stark focus the question of what kind of discipline today's children need and from whom. How can parents decide what's the best way for them to raise their own children, especially when as parents they're hard-pressed with economic stress, time stress, and wildly different advice from all sides? My guest this week is Dr. Robert E. Kay, a psychiatrist who has worked with families for decades. He urges parents to return to the basics of child rearing, and he'll share some powerful ideas which can help parents make the best decision for their family and help prevent problems later on in their children's life. Dr. Kay has a wide familiarity with the many theories of child rearing and believes parents can work with their children instead of against them to gain their cooperation and their respect. Dr. Kay graduated from Tufts University Medical School and received his psychiatric training at Walter Reed General Hospital. Following military service, he served as medical director of the Center for Child Guidance and was a board member of the school in Rose Valley, Pennsylvania. Dr. Kay has decades of experience working with children and their families. He's published numerous articles on child rearing, interviewing techniques for youth, primary and secondary education, the American school system as a whole, enhancing children's propensity for learning, and the teaching of reading. In recent years, he's been greatly involved with the homeschooling or unschooling and home education movements, and that's how I made connection with him, a great privilege. And he has presented his ideas on teaching and learning on radio, on television, and in court as well. He has three children of his own, and he's also the author of the foreword to my book, The Seven Secrets of Successful Parents, and that was quite a privilege for me to have him be part of my book. So welcome to Family First, Dr. Bob Kay. And so I want to start out by asking you, what took you down the road to wanting to understand that whole child rearing process with your psychiatric background?
What is it that you want people to understand about it most?
Yes. What got you first interested in understanding the child rearing process?
Well, I'm not exactly certain about what got me interested, but perhaps it started in 1931 when my mother was told by a well-known psychologist that infants should be fed on the dot of 8, 12, 4, and 8. So at 11:45 in the morning, I'd be screaming my guts out with hunger, and VASA graduate mother with a minor in psychology would be sitting by my crib, stroking my back and saying, "Hang on, Bobby, hang on, just 15 minutes more, and you will be fed." After that, my analyst had trouble figuring out why I've always felt somewhat weak and helpless and out of control and so on. But anyway, that got me
That's a great story. And I know in those days, they were trying to make children into automatons and be on schedule.
They tried, but all they did was to produce some kind of a rebellious character, although my rebellion took about 40 or 50 years to really show itself. The issue, of course, is the one of trust, and that is to trust that we, the human being, as the sociobiologists have almost unanimously concluded, the human being is a fundamentally social, cooperative, thinking, learning, communicating creature on the day of birth. And we are, like all successful animals, fundamentally social. And if they understand that all those are the beginnings in every child, then child rearing shouldn't be as difficult as most people make it. Because like all social creatures, their primary concern is safety and security and survival. And the question then becomes, how does the parent best meet a child's needs? And we go from there.
So for parents today, then, getting back to basics means assuming that your child is naturally social, naturally cooperative, naturally wants to learn, and that makes it a little easier on parents that their job then is not to force the child to do anything, but rather to look after their safety and security. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. I often make a somewhat radical sounding statement that an infant can make 6 decisions on the day of birth. They can decide when they're hungry and when they're full, when they need sleep and when they want to wake up, and when they need cuddling and when they need to be left alone. And those 6 decisions that a child can make on the day of birth just precedes a lot of other decisions that they can make on their own. For example, the studies at Columbia University showed that from toddlers on up would self-select a perfectly balanced diet if such were made available and there was no junk food in the house. All you have to do, it turns out, is put out the right kinds of food and the toddler will self-select what his or her body needs. And we did it with our children. My wife and I found raising children relatively easy. We operated on the theory that parents should be seen and not heard. That is, we were around to respond to their basic needs for safety, security, and survival. And our job was to feed them when they were hungry and protect them when they were in potentially difficult situations, like on the sidewalk and so on, and give them what they needed within limits, and operating on the theory that a child's freedom to swing his arm ends where our nose begins. But over and so it's not so difficult to know how to set limits, which are sometimes necessary, because immature brains, of course, are going to behave in immature ways for 15 or 20 or 25 years. But because the survival instinct is so powerful, most halfway decently raised children are not going to let themselves get into serious trouble. They will, of course, experiment a little bit with a little bit of alcohol and a little bit of marijuana and a little bit of shoplifting. For example, there is something like 70 or 80% of young teenagers in an upper class, even wealthy community, will do a little bit of shoplifting before they grow up. So little bits of bad behavior are to be expected But any half decently raised child is not going to let him or herself get into real serious trouble.
So okay? I'm sure parents are thinking, well, a lot of kids do get into serious trouble. So there's something in there about, you mentioned trusting the parent that their needs are going to be met, but there's also something about the kids learning how to manage their freedom by the parents showing some trust to them. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, yes, of course. But we learn what society is all about by the behavior of other people. And we pull our punches in anticipation of the possibility that somebody else is going to get very upset if we behave very badly. And the end result is that most kids do not do anything terribly destructive. They will do a little bit of vandalism and a little bit of shoplifting and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but they do not let themselves get into serious trouble. Now, this, of course, brings out the fact that the authority figures in our culture, the police and the school authorities and so on, are overreacting in many cases and making semi-delinquents out of kids who are just doing the normal, ridiculous adolescent things that most kids will experiment with. There was a case last week where a little kindergarten girl was making a lot of trouble, and there was a rule that the teacher couldn't lay hands on a child, so they called the police. The police came to the school. They handcuffed this 5-year-old girl and took her off to the police station. I mean, things are getting pretty ridiculous at points here.
Yes, I heard about that case. It's absolutely phenomenal that they brought in the police to handle a 5-year-old.
Oh, yeah, that's not new. That was reported first about 10 years ago, actually, in a very fine book. But I can't remember the name of it. It was about lawyers and so on. And speaking of books, there are 3 marvelous books, even though, as far as I'm concerned, the child is the expert. The child knows pretty much what they need and when they need it. And to that extent, every child is the expert in the situation. Our job as parents is to respond to the expressed needs, particularly for food and cuddling and maybe limit setting, obviously. But there are 3 wonderful books out there. One of them is yours, The 7 Secrets of Successful Parents.
Thank you.
The second one is The Continuum Concept by Gene Liedloff, which discusses as far as I'm concerned, the only normal human beings we've ever known, which were 2 tribes in the backwoods of Brazil. Everybody else has been, to an extent, mishandled from the get-go, as far as I'm concerned. But The Continuum Concept's a great book. And then the third one is The Parents' Tao Te Ching by William Martin, which is not a prescription. Neither of those latter 2 books are prescriptive, but they give you an attitude of how to treat young human beings. In other words, I've often said that we should try at all times to put ourselves in the child's shoes, that we should try to see the world from a child's point of view. It's not easy, can't be done automatically, but it can be done. And in addition to trying to see the world from a child's point of view, I've often liked the admonition that children should be treated like a distinguished visitor from a foreign land who is unfamiliar with our language and our customs. And that, of course, it then follows that you meet their basic needs, but you set limits when necessary.
Yeah, that's such a good picture, and it allows a parent to see that the child is already a personality, already a being that knows its basic needs, and they just have a whole lot to learn to integrate into the social environment by learning the language.
Course. But they want to learn. I mean, the bottom line issue, of course, is that children want they're the creatures of a social and cooperative animal. They want to become a member of the dominant culture, because we are social beings, and we want to survive and seek safety and security and so on. And there's no question that children, they want some individual room for decision making. They want to do some things in their own way, but they also are driven to become an acceptable member of the society. And the bottom line in that, of course, is that at least 90% of the human race in a reasonably stable society become quite well behaved as they grow up. Our criminal rate is about 2%, I think, maybe 2.5%. The mental illness psychosis rate is about 2 or 3%. And then a goodly number of people, of course, have some psychiatric difficulties as they go along. But in terms of overall behavior patterns, at least 90% of the population are reasonably well behaved 99% of the time.
We need to remember that, because we get so wrapped up in the news and we're interested in the aberrations.
Oh, yeah.
And we forget that the core turn out pretty well.
Right. They turn out rather passive and obedient. This is a problem from some points of view. For example, only 3.9% of Pennsylvania adults have ever participated in a political rally or protest, and a mere 10% have ever contacted a government official about any problem at all, and 80% of seniors in high school have stated that they will never again ever voluntarily read a book, although 50% actually eventually do read a book. But we have, due to a combination of parental approach and the school system, we've developed a very passive, obedient, and deferential citizenry who are extremely reluctant to ask questions, because questions upset authority figures. The authorities do not like citizens who ask too many questions.
And, okay, Bob, we're up on a break now, so we're going to break for a moment, but listeners, please stay tuned. Bob will shake some of your parenting paradigms, so stay tuned.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking with Dr. Robert Kay. We're calling him Bob Kay, about child rearing and getting back to basics. And I actually met Bob years ago when my kids were very small, and he was instrumental in reinforcing my belief that parenting does not need to be so hard. And we've been talking about how important it is as a parent not to live in fear that somehow your child's going to go wrong, but rather act from the knowledge that the child knows what they need and they want to be cooperative, they want to learn, they want to please the parent. And so our job isn't as hard as it sometimes appears, that somehow we need to save them from all kinds of temptation. They will do some experimentation, but if they've gotten the hugs and the food and the sleep they need, they will basically survive okay and be decent people. But at the, just before the break, we were talking, Bob, about how, it's surprising how many adults are rather passive and obedient and don't really follow their dreams. So why does that happen for even sort of regular people that don't get into a lot of trouble?
Well, I guess to generalize, the issue is that most cultures, most Western cultures, and I assume most cultures everywhere, seem to value passivity and obedience on the part of the young. We don't understand exactly where that came from. We do recognize the importance, obviously, of the adult setting a good example, setting limits, stimulating, demonstrating. Obviously, an adult is absolutely vital to the growth of a child, but we overvalue passivity, obedience, and deference to the authorities, particularly in school and college, where the idea is to memorize and regurgitate whatever nonsense the authority figures want to purvey at that moment. This results in the credential society. We have zillions of kids with various kinds of meaningless credentials, and I think it's important to note that 80,000 bartenders now have BA degrees. So we've got a real issue on that score. As far as the obedience issue and cooperation is concerned, of course, though we're fundamentally cooperative creatures, children hate to take orders. As a matter of fact, adults do not like to take orders unless they have volunteered to go to work for a particular corporation. So children resist being ordered around, being told to clean their room, being told to pick up, being told to do this. On the other hand, because we are cooperative creatures, they will respond to, please help me clean up the living room, please help me take out the trash, please help me clean up your room a little bit once in a while. Kids are remarkably responsive to the words, please help me do it, when it's a joint cooperative effort on the part of the parents and the child. But they do resist being told what to do, and of course there's the old saw that children never I'm losing it, but I'll give you the other one, which is that Churchill said, I love to learn, but I hate being taught. And I think that's absolutely true. Children love to learn, and human beings resist being taught, and they particularly resist being questioned about what they've learned, which is why the Homeschooling Resource Center in Delaware County, Open Connections, has as her number one rule that no adult can ever ask a child a question if the adult already knows the answer, because that's something we don't dare do to another adult. The way you get around the issue of finding out that you're an effective teacher, of course, is to put into effect invitationaleducation.net, which is show me what you can do, and then I or another child will help you do better, unquote, which means that cooperative learning is perhaps used at that point. And children will respond very nicely to that. They like to show what they can do, but they hate to be put on the spot to demonstrate and then be judged concerning their competence, which is, and incidentally, which is why choral reading is so effective as a technique. You read together. The child is never put on the spot to read out loud alone, but they will teach themselves to read when it's done in unison with the parent after they're interested, and when the brain is ready, which may not be until age 6 or 7 or even 8, but if the parents and the schools have read aloud to the child to get them interested, then choral reading becomes very easy and very productive. Okay?
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I remember we did homeschool our children after a couple of years in a very nice friend's school. But one of the reasons we sent them to that school to start was because the principal said that if we just give them lots of support and sharing and fun, they'll all be reading by third grade. So what you're saying is that 6 to 8 period, you know, some kids will catch on quicker than others, but if they have a stimulating, fun environment, they'll want to do that, and they will pick it up, and without force or routine or testing or putting them on the spot, embarrassing them if they mispronounce a word or can't figure it out. It makes so much sense. What can parents do if they have a job themselves? This is such a problem now that most parents are working all day, and they hand over the learning to a school, and then the child sent home with homework, and the parent really ends up being a baby teacher instead of the teacher being a baby parent. What do you tell a parent who's frustrated by the fact they don't have the time to be this kind of conscious parent?
The good news there is that the best thing we've ever done for kids in school, I'm a homeschool unschooler by inclination, but the best thing we've ever done for kids who do go to school is to follow the rule of Chaim Ganat, who mentioned that we should turn the responsibility for learning and achievement in school over to the child where it belongs. And the way you do that is the parent never asks about homework, but helps the child if the child asks for help, and never reads the report card unless the child asks them to read the report card. They may have to turn off the computer, of course, but and never speak to the teacher unless the child asks them to talk to the teacher. And under those conditions, 95% of the kids raise their grades, which is just mind-boggling how kids respond to the idea of being given the responsibility for success and achievement. The other thing which has been extremely successful was, I think, was devised actually by a professor at Delaware County Community College, was to encourage kids over the age of 10 to split-brain themselves. And what that means is you tell the child to turn half your brain into a floppy disk on which you put all the stuff that the teacher wants to hear about, and make the other half of the brain into a hard drive on which you put everything that's interesting and useful, like the basic learning, thinking, communicating, and cooperating skills you were born with, plus the reading, writing, and arithmetic, and I don't know, maybe some button pushing, but that everybody picks up anyway. Then you're ready to roll out of the credential world into the real world. The real world requires basic skills so you can learn the job on the job, which is where effective learning actually occurs. Or, as John Holt said, learning is not the result of teaching. Learning is the result of the activity of the learner. That is, a good teacher can stimulate, can demonstrate, can guide, can encourage, but only the child can decide to really learn something.
That makes so much sense, and I think if people think back about their own school experience, they'll see that life would have been a lot easier and made more sense once they were out of school from their experience since then if these kinds of concepts had been explored during their mm-hmm. schooling. You know, if the teacher said, okay, this is what I need, I'm going to tell you about, but now let's see what you can do with it or how it might be useful to you in your daily life, giving the child back some power in discriminating what's meaningful and what isn't. We kind of think, well, the kids don't realize that long division will someday be useful and we just have to ram it into their heads. And yet, most people have never used long division since 10th grade.
We don't know what anybody's going to need to know in the future beyond some basic skills and the gross outlines of the culture. We have no idea what each individual is going to need to know. And out of in recognition of that, the best university system in the history of the human race was a British university where the reward for demonstrated learning by your comments, questions, arguments, criticisms, and a good paper in each course, the reward was to be excused from all examinations for the entire 4 years. Those kids studied night and day in order to avoid testing. They came out brilliantly educated, and nobody believed how effective they had been, so no other university has adopted that system, as far as I know. But it's remarkable. I mean, it was just truly a remarkable experiment.
Oh, I can believe it. If they could show their learning by asking questions, doing mm-hmm. intelligent discussion, kids love doing that, but like you said, they don't want to be put on the spot with an examination which basically assumes they haven't learned. And that's a wound to the self-esteem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it worked beautifully. Mm-hmm.
So if a parent, if this is making sense to them and they're thinking, well, okay, my child's already 10, and I've been going over their homework with them, and I've been saying no, no, no to this and that, and been focusing on the setting limits without really believing that the child wants to work with me to grow up, what kind of changes might they make at this point?
Boy, that's a deep and difficult question, because I would really have to know what had happened between the parent. There's no magic formula that I know of that'll cover all situations, except what I mentioned before, which is to beg the parent to try to put themselves in the child's shoes. Try to see the world from an immature brain's point of view. And it does take between 20 and 25 years before the brain is fully developed. But on the other hand, I think it's important to mention that in Switzerland, 77% of the kids leave school at age 14 to go to work or into a training program. So they have a lot of good stuff going by age 14 anyway. But it's extremely, a question like that is very difficult to generalize about. And maybe that's the point at which they should be talking things over with a psychologist or a learning specialist of some kind. I'm not sure.
Well, that's a great answer. And each parent-child relationship is individual, and we don't know what's gone under the bridge so far. But that if things aren't working, then get some help. But also, in your own mind, try to put yourself in the child's position. If you come into a conflict kind of situation, step back from it and really try to figure out where the child's coming from and why they're upset, why they're not responding well, and remember that the things we've mentioned before, that they do want to be cooperative, they want to please their parents, they want to be a constructive part of their society group, and trying to keep that in mind is, I think,
very important. Advice. The problem is, of course, they also want to be themselves. They want to be individuals. They want to do their own thing. And that inevitably clashes with parental and school expectations. So how do you help a child achieve some balance between what they feel they'd like or need and the expectations of society? It's not easy, but it's not enormously difficult either, as proven by the fact that 90% of people, or 90 even higher than that, end up as reasonable members of the culture, neither psychotic nor criminal. So a hopeful expectation is a very valuable thing. And don't forget, many of the geniuses of the world were dropouts from school or never went to school and were very difficult. Some of the geniuses were extraordinarily difficult children. So we don't want to lose hope.
Right, right. We're coming up on another break, Bob. But I love that hopeful expectations idea, that we stay in hope rather than fear, that our children are going to mature, be happy, contributing people. And if they don't fit with the particular authority pattern that the school has, maybe they're going to be geniuses in some area that they haven't discovered yet.
It's important to allow
that to happen. So we're up on a break, but we'll be back in just a couple minutes. So please, everyone, okay, Stay tuned.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? 5-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking with Dr. Robert E. Kay, who's a psychiatrist who's been working with children and their families for several decades. And we're talking about how child rearing is a lot easier and more fun and usually more successful if we get back to some of the basics about child rearing. And that what we've been talking about is that children are basically social. Humans are social creatures, and they want to cooperate. They like to do things together. They learn by our models and our demonstrations, and they don't like being forced or tested or assumed that they're not learning. And we as parents need to protect them and demonstrate good living to them and not freak out when they do press that envelope or experiment a little with negative behavior. And if we can keep our heads about them, our kids are most likely to do so too. So this is the second time I've interviewed Bob Kay on my show, and this is actually the last show of my first year. So I'm very excited to have been on the air for a year with Family First. We have tens of thousands of listeners, and it's quite exciting. And I wanted to say that I've had for a long time a plan to start a blog to post Dr. Kay's wonderful articles and writings. So I'm going to do that in the next 6 months. And so do look for that. And also in his foreword to my book, he lists some of these important principles that we're sharing today. And, of course, you can get The 7 Secrets of Successful Parents at Amazon or through any of your favorite ways of getting books. So Dr. Bob Kay, I wanted to get back about how did we get so far away from those basic assumptions of that you mentioned that they know in the forests of Brazil that kids want to cooperate, they want to do what we're doing, they learn naturally. How did we get away from that?
Well, we don't know how we got away from it. I would like to suggest that to talk about a small child is wanting to cooperate, maybe putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable. We are cooperative creatures when our brains are fully developed. Until that happens, we're willing to cooperate with a parent who says, please help me clean up, but we are not I would not say we're not actually cooperative in our behavior patterns until the brain is fairly well developed. Unless you want to say something like when a child takes the breast, that's the earliest manifestation of cooperative behavior, because it makes the parent feel good to know that she is feeling that she's feeding her infant. And it makes the infant feel good because he or she is filling their stomach. So you could say that there is cooperative behavior shown on the first day of life. But as far as cooperating with taking out the trash, that depends on the parent saying, please help me do it, as opposed to ordering them to do so. Because, as we said before, human beings don't like to be ordered around. You also,
I think that's a very interesting point, that distinction about when we talk about a child being cooperative, we're often sliding into an obedience kind of meaning rather than what you're saying of responding to a social invitation.
Right.
That's
right.
That's a brilliant distinction.
Yep. You also use the term that we hope the parents don't freak out about bad behavior, but Chaim Ganat recommended the ideal way to freak out, which is when some bad behavior has occurred, the parent should hop up and down in place and screech at the ceiling and say things like, you have caused me immense rage and intolerable frustration, and I cannot stand this any longer, and then screech at the ceiling. But that's it. That's all they have to do. They don't have to punish. They don't have to deprive. They just want to leave the child with the memory of a parent going berserk. And that's all you need, because there's nothing you can do about what's already happened. You can only hope that the child will think about behaving differently in a similar situation in the future. And it works beautifully. I had kids all over Southwest Philadelphia telling their parents to screech at the ceiling because they just had done something bad. So it's a beautiful technique, and it reflects what the monkeys do. When a monkey infant or a monkey child starts behaving badly, the mother screeches at the heavens above, and that's all that they have to do. They don't hit, they don't punish. There's no corporal punishment of any kind, obviously. They just screech at the ceiling, and that stops the child's behavior. So what we really want to get back to is what some of our good primate relatives are doing with their children, because it really sets the stage for what we should be doing.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. I always think of one time in the Philadelphia Zoo, I saw some little monkeys that were trying to climb out of a moat or something, and the mother just sat there while this little baby just kept trying and trying and trying.
Now wait, Randy, you can't say anything about animal behavior based on animals in zoos.
It was a good example, because she just put her hand under his foot and he got a footing, and then he kept climbing, but she let him do as best he could first.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm sure there are some examples, but you want to be very careful about generalizing about human or animal behavior from animals in zoos or domesticated animals or anything.
Such a good point. And we've talked before about even some of the conclusions that are being drawn today from animals in the wild aren't reflective of how they would have behaved before their environment was severely distorted.
Exactly. Observing, counting behavior, observing behavior changes the behavior. And this is an old problem, particularly in the sociobiological field, that just observing animals will change their behavior. So you're never sure that you're seeing what's really going on.
Yeah, we know that from quantum physics, and it applies even better in the sociobiological. Yeah, that's amazing. So, if we want to raise kids that are inventive and creative, but also turn into helpful, cooperative adults, the advice about laying off as far as schools, it sounds so radical because parents they're getting more and more involved in schools. We're talking about helicopter parents in college that go to their interviews with them. How can we encourage parents to stop all that hovering?
I have no good answers beyond suggesting that they read the three books I mentioned. It's a terrible problem because parents love their kids and they want to do the best for them and they want to help them as much as they can. And, it's very difficult to know, what the limits of help should be. There are no quick, easy, answers to that one, I'm afraid. Beyond the assumption, making the assumption that the child wants to live. Trusting. I think so much of what we should be doing boils down to the one word, trust your child to know what they're doing. I could mention my oldest son who quit kindergarten in 3 days, third grade in 3 weeks, eighth grade in 3 months, Temple in 1 month, and then finally got through, happily got through Drexel, and now has worked for 30 years for a big government corporation. I mean, there's no way to predict these things.
Right. And the bottom line is that each parent-child relationship is different. And if they're coming from the basic assumptions that we've discussed, they're most likely to allow the child to emerge as the person they're meant to become. Does that make sense?
Yep. The assuming that they want to survive and that they are social and cooperative animals, assuming that should make life easier for a lot of parents.
That's great, and I think it make it easier for teachers and college professors too. I've talked to teachers who say they spend most of their time trying to mollify the parents instead of doing actual responsive teaching to the students.
Very sad.
So I think maybe I really appreciate what you're presenting to help pull back from this direction of, I think it's kind of more and more control out of fear that somehow our children are going to go wrong,
instead of what you said
before, the hopeless expectation, hopeful expectation that they will survive because of their natural inclination to do so.
Randy, there's no law that says a parent can't say to a child, I think you're making a bad decision about what school to go to or something like that. But, they can express their opinion just as long as they don't lose trust in the assumption that the child really wants to make it, because most 95% of the kids want to lead some kind of a decent life. It's very difficult right now because of the employment situation. Young males in particular are having a terrible time finding any kind of meaningful employment. So it's very tough. But one thing they do in Europe, which helps a lot, and that is that no teenager or no young person ever lives with their parents. If they have to, for financial reasons, live with the parent, they exchange parents. They don't live with their own parents. They exchange parents with some other kid, and that helps a great deal. It takes the, intense personal aspect out of the situation.
Well, that's a radical idea right there to, because so many parents are concerned now that they thought their children would get up and leave, and mm-hmm. after college they come back.
Yeah, yeah, 35% of the kids between the ages of 24 and 30, 35% of the males have moved back with their parents. Now, I think this is a terrible mistake. You should move in with somebody else's parent, as far as I'm concerned.
Then you'd have to adjust and grow up instead of staying as a child.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, and it goes so quickly, and I so appreciate having you as a guest on Family First. This is Dr. Robert E. Kay, and I hope his ideas have really stimulated your thinking and also helped you relax and have a little more fun being a parent. So thank you again for being on Family First. Bob, I appreciate it.
Thank you for being you, Randy.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yep.
Take care now.
Okay.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.